Welcome to The Neutral Ground. This week, my guest is Dr. Jeff Zwierink. Dr. Zwierink is a research scholar at Reasons to Believe. He earned a PhD in astrophysics from Iowa State University. His writing and speaking encourage people to consider the connection between Scripture's truth and scientific evidence. He is the author of Escaping the Beginning, Is There Life Out There?, and Who's Afraid of the Multiverse?, and co-author of the Impact Events Student Devotional Series. Jeff also is a project scientist at UCLA. In this episode, we hit upon quite a few fascinating topics. We discuss the various multiverse models, the relationship between the Big Bang and inflation. We talk about how seeing Star Wars influenced his curiosity in science as a young man, and even a little bit about the science behind the iconic binary sun image of Luke Skywalker on Tatooine. We also dive heavily into the relationship between science and religion, and how the two can feed each other when it comes to relating the information back to the human experience. There are links in the show notes to Dr. Zwierink's works and some information about how you can help support the podcast as well. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Jeff Zwierink. Jeff, welcome to The Neutral Ground. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Joe. I'm excited for our conversation today.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to jump right into this with arguably the most difficult question for you. And my nephew would kill me if I did not ask this question. Your specialty is in astrophysics and gamma rays. If I believe hard enough and I bombard my body with gamma rays, will I turn into the Incredible Hulk?
Probably has nothing to do with how hard you believe. And there is a remote possibility, but it's going to take a lot of tries and you're going to die on all the other tries. So it is not something I recommend by any stretch. Gamma rays are not good for the body because a little bit of science here is that the gamma rays, when they go through your body absorbs the energy from them and it basically heats the cells up, ruptures the cells, and you die by all your cells exploding, which is painful. So he can give it a try, but I wouldn't recommend it. So.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Definitively, don't try this at home, right? All right, so let me begin now with a little bit more of a traditional kind of approach here as well. I loved your book, Who's Afraid of the Multiverse? I've read other books on it. I've listened to other lectures on the idea of multiverse theories. And what I often find is that they're very excited about the science, but the problem is sometimes it's so excited about the science, it doesn't bring the reader along for the ride. What you did quite well is you brought us along with your excitement. So I'd actually like to first, because this is very complicated stuff, I was wondering if you could foreground the relationship for us a little bit, because this will play a role throughout this discussion, that relationship between, let's say, the Big Bang, the expansion and inflation.
Yeah, so, just to give a little bit of background of why I was interested in the multiverse and what I'm trying to do with that is that a lot of times, I'm a Christian, I'm going to try and provide scientific evidences or scientific support, apologetics for you, if you will, of why Christianity is correct. And one of the things I realized is that when, at least at the time, most Christians, when they talked about the multiverse, it's like, oh, if the multiverse exists, that means, it's kind of the impression that Christianity was wrong. And so I really began thinking about, what if the multiverse is true? And as I explored that question, what I realized is that there's pretty good scientific reason to think there might be a multiverse. Now that's not saying that the multiverse exists, but I think there's good scientific reason. And it flows just out of the question you asked, is when you talk about inflation and what's going on, that's where the idea of a multiverse arises. And so just give a little bit of background of why that question comes up. So you go back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, people were, knowing that general relativity describes the dynamics of the universe. And so the universe is expanding. That has this connotation of a beginning. People were wrestling with that. And some fairly definitive work happened in the 60s and 70s that shows that if general relativity is true, and we're really confident of that, and if energy behaves a certain way, a couple other conditions that flow in there, then when you trace time backwards, you end up in this very hot, dense state where the laws of physics break down, and that looks a lot like a beginning. And so that's kind of Big Bang cosmology. The universe starts in this incredibly hot, dense state. It expands, cools down, eventually stars, planets, galaxies, and ultimately humans here on Earth form. So, you got this single universe, and all of this is kind of nice and tied up in a bow. Well, there are some problems with Big Bang cosmology. Among the big problems is, why is the cosmic background radiation so uniform? And why does the universe look so flat? And we can talk about those if you're interested. And there's also this other problem of, why are there no magnetic monopoles around? And one of the things of somebody who's trying to solve why are there no measurable magnetic monopoles, realized that if the universe in its early phases went through this very fast period of expansion, it would solve that monopole problem, but it would also solve the why is the universe flat and why is the temperature so uniform. But and that's what inflation is that it solves those problems. The other things that come along with inflation is that the universe is far larger than anything we can ever see. And so that gets us into the concept of a multiverse. And when you talk about how inflation might work, you get other types of multiverses. So that's really where the multiverse comes in, is looking at inflation. So
you mention also, and you outline in the book, essentially four models for multiverse theories. Can you foreground a little bit of information on those as well?
Yeah, and that, again, that kind of flows out of, when I started talking about a multiverse, you think, oh, that's just obvious and what it is. And well, it turns out that when you kind of probe into it, there's different ways you could envision a multiverse happening. And I will straight off the bat say, this is not my invention or my idea or my way. There was a fellow who's a cosmologist that I know he's either at MIT or Harvard. I think he's at MIT now, Max Tegmark, who came up with these different categories. And it really is just a way of saying, okay, when you're talking about a multiverse, what are the options for what you're talking about? And one of those options is, if you define a universe as everything that we can see, and it turns out there's a relatively limited amount because our universe is only 14 billion years old and the speed of light has a finite value. You can define a region. There's a most distant region where light could propagate to Earth. And so that's the observable universe. The multiverse is just anything beyond that. And so when you ask the anything beyond that, what can you have? Well, you can just have, you get out to the edge and it's a whole lot more of the same stuff. That's, in my booklet, it's kind of the Star Wars multiverse. You go a long ways away, but it all really kind of looks just the same. I call that a level one multiverse. Now, you could have another multiverse where, in that everything looks kind of the same, the laws of physics are basically the same, speed of light's the same, expansion. You could have other regions where gravity is stronger or weaker, or other regions where the speed of light is faster or slower, or you don't have an or a weak force or something like that. And so there are these other bubbles where the laws of physics look different than they do in our universe. And that's a level two multiverse. So, if you think of the level one multiverse is just a whole lot more stuff out there, a level two is a whole different bubble where things just look really different. You've got another type of multiverse, and you're at least in my age range, and so you might remember Back to the Future, where Marty McFly goes back, changes things, he comes back, and now the present looks different, and so he's just in a different multiverse, if you will, or a different section of the multiverse, and so that's really a quantum mechanical multiverse, if you will, and that's because that's what produces the multiverse. And then there's kind of another one where I consider it just kind of a catch-all of every different way you could conceive of a multiverse, but really it's more driven by the mathematics of how we can think about things. And so there's kind of four levels, just a whole lot more of the same, bubbles with different laws of physics, quantum mechanical multiverse, and then just mathematical multiverses.
It's fantastic stuff. And what I walked away from reading your books was a healthy amazement at just the juggling of information that has to happen here to keep everything in order, and how everything has to connect with each other in order to make these theories really kind of stand out. Everything has to connect. If not, of course, your peers and everyone around you will, rightfully so, in the science community, will say, this stuff doesn't add up. You know, oftentimes what I love about what you just said more than anything was I could hear the excitement in your voice still for this. And it comes across on the page as well, which we'll talk about in a minute, a specific section where I could hear almost the 8-year-old version of you on the page talking about Star Wars. We'll get there. But I think you need two things to keep yourself interested in a field. I know even with me in literature and American Lit, you need excitement and you need struggle. If you're not struggling with something, very quickly you feel there's no reason for me to be here. So I'm curious, what is one thing that you're excited about with the field still? And what's one thing that you struggle with?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, I have to say that at some level, my struggles just kind of change. It's different questions that, in some sense, are kind of driven by the conversations of the day. You know, what ultimately originally got me interested in the multiverse was a conversation I was having with some of my scientific colleagues around a dinner table. And we were talking about whether the supernatural played a role in science and how you might test that and what would be the evidence of. And I was talking about Big Bang cosmology that pointed to a beginning. I was talking about design in the universe. And the guy looked right over at me and he goes, well, that's all fine and dandy, but what universe are you talking about there? I recognize, okay, if the multiverse exists, how I'm talking about this has got to change. And so my thought was, what if the multiverse exists? And I didn't know the answer to that because there's some good scientific reasons why it might exist. Does that mean Christianity's wrong? And so I really began to just ask the question, what if it exists? You know, one, is there scientific evidence for it? If there is, what does Christianity have to say? And so that kind of moment of tension where I realized, wait a second, here's something that challenges the way I'm thinking, gave me the opportunity to dig in and dive deeper and say, is that really a conflict or do I just not know the information I need? And so, you know, I've done that with the multiverse. That was kind of one of the first places where I did it. But, you know, we talk a lot about search for life in the universe. And as it's easy to get the impression when you listen to Christians that this is the only life in the universe. And it got me thinking, well, what if we find life in our studies? You know, we can scientifically probe that. What if we find it? And so, again, I had one of those, all right, what do I do with that? And so I kind of dug in and worked at it. You know, does the universe have a beginning? That's one of those questions. Again, a skeptic that I was talking to kind of challenged me on some of my thinking there. So I like and I am annoyed by those questions at the same time. I'm annoyed by them because it's like, I don't have the answer. But then as I'm able to dig in, I realize, wait a second. Ultimately, you know, bottom line is Christianity is a very robust worldview. And so it can handle those questions, but it gives me a great chance to learn things and study things and know things in a way that I didn't before. And I may not like the initial annoyance and it does require a lot of work, but it always pays off in the end.
You don't shy away from, in your work, philosophical implications. And I think that's very important today more than ever. I think people are trying to bring together again that relationship between philosophy and science. And I think that's actually probably where we produce our best science, believe it or not, this is just me personally, is when you add a philosophical element to it of thinking about how this relates to the human experience and what it means for the human experience. And you do that quite well. You wrestle with these things. You even confront the idea of, okay, I think this was, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was either a level 3 and possibly a level 3 and 4 multiverse question more than anything, was this idea of, okay, in this scenario, maybe you have multiple versions of you, each with their own histories. My question to you, and this is, I think, kind of a tough one, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you reconcile these kind of philosophical questions personally with yourself when you're doing this work?
Well, I think you raise a profound point. You know, I'm going to take a little bit of a detour and then answer your question, is that, you know, there's this kind of this perception that science is this objective, just measure what the data says, that gives you all the answers. And philosophy, theology, I mean, these ideas just don't play any role in it. And what's interesting is that when you look at the history of science, often the things that drive people, the questions they have or why they're doing something, are motivated by philosophical considerations. One of the most profound and productive philosophical consideration was Einstein back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, was looking at what was kind of a somewhat of an obscure point. And that obscure point was that if you did things in a Galilean or Newtonian framework, when you moved faster, things changed a certain way. But if you dealt with things from an electromagnetic standpoint or a Maxwellian standpoint, as you moved, things changed in a different way. And what bothered him about that was that depending on how you were moving, you could tell how you were moving based on how the laws of physics looked. And philosophically, he didn't like that. He thought the laws of physics ought to look the same for all observers at all times, no matter how they're moving. And that philosophical idea, ultimately, when he worked it out, produced the special theory of relativity and the general theory of relativity. So this idea that philosophy and theology don't play any role, that just really, it's a non-starter when you look at the history of science. But as for how I do it, I mentioned I'm a Christian. And one of the things that what I love about science is that it is committed to a pursuit of truth, that you can have all sorts of great ideas, but ultimately the ones that are true or worth continuing to investigate are the ones that align with what we measure in the universe. You can talk about whatever you want to call that, but ultimately what that's doing is saying there's this objective reality called the world, and our good scientific models are the ones that align with that. So it's a pursuit of the truth. Well, I think Christianity is a pursuit of the truth as well. Among other things, Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." If science is pursuing truth, understanding how this physical creation works, if Christianity is true and explaining how God has revealed himself in scripture and in creation, then ultimately those truths have to align when we've properly interpreted things. And so when I'm looking at these philosophical ideas of, are there a bunch of me's out there? I'm more troubled, not so much whether there's a bunch of Jeff Zwerings out there, but I'm troubled by if that way of looking at it is correct. When Jesus was alive, there's Jesuses scattered throughout the multiverse. And that seems a little problematic. And so what that will do for me is say, it helps guide me and say, I'm pretty sure that's not the right way of looking at it, because there are some philosophical things that are not going to be resolved well, or that are very troubling and troublesome for the way Christianity has described things. And so that helps me to find the ways that are going to more likely work out to be good explanations. So that's kind of basically what I do. You know, is there a bunch of me's out there? Well, it's possible, but, you know, as I look at scripture, it seems to say, well, God created each of us. We're all individuals. And if we're now scattered throughout the multiverse, that seems to raise troubling philosophical issues. And I think that also becomes an apologetic discussion you can have with people, because I think that troubles certain people, and other people it just doesn't seem to bother.
We share, I can tell through your writing, we share, I think, a healthy love a little bit too for the heroic narrative as well. And I think, I won't speak for you, but I know I'm a Roman Catholic. In my religion, I draw a tremendous amount of strength from the heroic, or I should say a heroic reading of my Christianity as well. And you mentioned Star Wars, and of course, that's a very strong heroic narrative as well, with a lot of scientific implications in terms of your field. You mentioned that very early on, it spoke to you from a very young age. I think you say as early as 8, when you saw, was it A New Hope? We saw the first movie.
That is correct, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about, because I'm always discussing with my students, you have to be open to being inspired, because that inspiration, that awe, can really grow into something truly special that's even beyond a career, right? The way you talk about your field is the way I wish everyone would talk about what they do, with that level of excitement. Can you talk just a little bit about what it was about Star Wars that hit you so early in your life?
Well, I am old enough to remember that I actually got to see Star Wars in the movie theater when it came out. And It's been an interesting discussion between myself and my kids, because my kids are all born minus one kid. You know, all of the movies have come out. Basically, they've been alive since the movies are out. And so at least if you're talking about the first six. And so this discussion of how does this play out? What are we doing in there is they have a different perspective on the movies. But I remember what I found fascinating about those movies is they were the first time where there was just big, grand cinematic, you know, just the special effects were phenomenal at the time. And it's interesting because you go back and you watch A New Hope now and the special effects are kind of, hey, that's no big deal. But that was what set the ground or laid the foundation for the special effects that we have going on today. But, you know, you've got this, one of the things that I do find fascinating about that story is, you know, here you've got this kind of late teenager, angst-ridden, wandering, doesn't know what his goal in life, wants this. The day-to-day life is demanding a much more humdrum or mundane life, and yet he ends up being part of this adventure where, you know, ultimately good triumphs over evil. And, you know, I mean, who doesn't like the Death Star blowing up? I mean, that's just a cool scene to start, but... just being a part, there's something about those stories that I love. I mean, you know, you, because the underdog is winning. I mean, I love Glory Road. I love Remember the Titans, because those movies are in that same vein of this shouldn't happen, but because people can work through and overcome these obstacles, they can accomplish something that wouldn't have been able to be accomplished otherwise.
Yeah. I've talked on the show about Tolkien and Lord of the Rings as well, in that same vein, that idea of nobody, when something evil is thrust upon you, something bad is thrust upon you, nobody wants it, but you have to in some way grapple with the reality of it and work your way through it. And that concept of good versus evil is very powerful, you know, for the human spirit in order to uplift us and make us have the hope to take another step forward in these kind of positions. You, in your book, Is There Life Out There, you have a section where you talk about the reality of Star Wars, specifically, and I don't want to get this incorrect, specifically the science behind that very famous image of Luke Skywalker seeing the two suns, right? The binary star system with an exoplanet. Did I get that right? That idea. Can you talk a little bit about, is that, what does astrophysics have to say about that iconic image? Is there reality there?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, as I was doing some research to prepare for writing that book, I ran across a resource that talked to, you know, that kind of went through the history of what can we trace where people have talked about this, or at least written things down so that we know what they've said. And what's fascinating is that you can find people talking about life out in the universe for the last 2,000 years. I mean, documented cases of that. But the fellow who is compiling this work made a statement up at the front. He goes, you know, we know extraterrestrial life exists. It has pervaded the culture, you know, so whether it's out there or not, it exists because it's all of the movies. It's just what happens. And so what I thought is a good illustration, or what I liked about using those analogies, is that, you know, so you've got Luke out there standing and there's two suns and we think, oh, wow, that would be so cool. The reality of it is in the last 100 or so years, we have been able to find out a lot of things about what life here on Earth requires. And the idea of two suns is fascinating, but when you look at the implications for what the planets that would be orbiting those two stars, the implications for the temperature on those planets, the temperature variations become very dramatic and very stark and in all likelihood make them uninhabitable. I mean, you know, we're talking about worrying about a 1 or 2 degrees Celsius change over 10, 15, or maybe let's, you know, even 100 years. If you're orbiting two stars, the change in luminosity just from the distance that you move from them and it is far greater than that. And that would have catastrophic effect for any sort of advanced life, for sure, probably any microbial life as well. So it provides good pictures of what might be, but then we can go in and say, all right, what does the science say about how this would work? And almost all, in all instances, the science says, you know, there are some really big challenges for life actually being in this sort of environment.
As I was reading that section, something dawned on me as well, and I might be a little clumsy here, so forgive me, but it dawned on me that when I finished that section and learned about the science behind it and the possibilities of it, I thought about, like you just mentioned, our movies, our TV, our media, where we have extraterrestrial life, and how much more interested we seem to be, not so much in whether or not this particular species or type could exist, right? If there's a planet of Wookiees out there, that kind of a thing. We tend to be really fascinated by the, again, the human questions. What are they like? Meaning, do they believe in things like justice? Do they have struggles? Do you find that part, because you talk about this philosophy as well, do you key in on that when you see these types of sci-fi media as well, the philosophical questions, or do you immediately go into a kind of scientific mode of, can this happen or what this would look like?
I don't know how most scientists approach that, but by and large, when I'm watching a movie, I try to engage and enjoy the story. You know, every now and again, something will come up and I'm like, that can't happen. You know, in all honesty, one of my favorite stories was, you know, we were watching Field of Dreams. Again, go back to the 90s with this, but I was watching it with my parents. And at one point in time, they're in St. Louis, and I think they're driving out towards the East Coast, and we're sitting there watching the movie. And my dad sees the signs and he's like, that's not how you drive to wherever it was, you know, because he was familiar with the area. But by and large, when we watch movies, we just watch and enjoy the story. But I do love the implications that come up out of the stories. And, you know, one of the things, you know, it's a little bit, not quite sci-fi, but one of the more recent movies that came out was Shang-Chi. And that has kind of that heroic narrative to it. But one of the things that I found interesting in that discussion was it's like, it seems to have the heroic narrative to it, but it's not so much in a good versus evil as it is kind of more an Eastern mystic mindset to it. And so I enjoy looking at things from that perspective. I think it makes great conversations, especially as my kids have gotten older after we watch them. But those seem to be the bigger questions. So I enjoy watching the movie. And just like, I mean, I love Shang-Chi and we've watched it a couple of times. I'll probably watch it again here in the not too distant future. But also seeing those philosophical, how worldviews come into play and what are the messages they're saying. And you know, as a Christian, how would I think about that? Those are some of the fun, fascinating thoughts and occasionally conversations that flow out of them in my family.
So can I ask you a follow-up then here of how did you try to explain, do people ask you about trying to explain the multiverse concept in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And if so, how does that work in the mind of someone who understands the science behind these ideas?
You know, I've thought about Marvel because, you know, that is one of the places where a multiverse exists. Although it seems to me the laws of physics are pretty much the same everywhere. So that's really kind of this, it's a Star Wars universe where you move through it in a different fashion. This is, at times you just have to say, this is a science fiction movie and this wouldn't actually work. And I'm not going to get too worked up about it, whether it does or not. So honestly, no, you're the first person to ask me that question, although I have thought about it in my head occasionally.
Yeah. I'm the type of person who I'll just shut it down and I just enjoy the story. My wife, however, though, she's right on something. If it's wrong, she'll be like, what is that? You know, that's not correct. This and that. But at the end of the day, for me, it's more about the story. Does the story prompt something in me, you know, in that, again, that kind of human experience or not? I'd like to make our way toward a more direct understanding and relationship between your faith and the science as well. And I'd like to do so by getting your reaction to something that just recently happened, actually not that long ago, in a discussion between Lex Fridman and Elon Musk. And I was incredibly taken aback by this. Lex Fridman was interviewing Elon Musk, and he was asking Musk about the 2020 launch of his SpaceX program with the first human beings inside. And I'm going to read this because I want to get the quotation just right here to set this up. Musk says, "We racked our brains to improve any possibility of improving the probability of success, and we could not think of anything more, and nor could NASA. That's just the best that we could do, and we went ahead and launched." Now, that's a very scientific engineering approach to the issue. There was nothing else that we could have done. But here's the part that I want to get your reaction to here. Elon continues and says, "Now, I'm not a religious person, but I nonetheless got on my knees and prayed for that mission." If you know Elon, and I've seen enough interviews with him, he has quite a sense of humor. He can be a kind of a trickster, almost a Loki kind of figure at times, but he was dead serious about that. What's your reaction to hearing something like that coming from Elon Musk?
Well, I don't know enough of Elon Musk, and I've kind of learned to be, until somebody tells me their motives or what they're thinking, I try not to assess too much, just because I know people will read what I do and miss my motives a lot. But what I see in Musk's description and response there is a recognition when you're dealing with traveling in space, it is a dangerous mission or dangerous circumstance, no matter how you slice it. There's an aspect to where living here on Earth, we are, I wonder if we've been lulled into a sense that things are safe and easy to do. And because everything about life here on Earth, everything about Earth seems to be towards life thriving, if you will. I mean, you know, even when you talk about the hurricanes and the earthquakes, I mean, living on Earth is just easy in a very real sense. And so now when we're talking about going out into space, you begin to encounter all of the ways that you can just perish in an instant. I mean, you run into, you know, moving at high speeds, you run into a small piece of debris, it just rips your ship apart, all the oxygen vent, or all the air vents out into space, and you die. You run out of fuel, there's no way to get back. Traveling out to Mars, you make a little bit of a miscalculation and you miss it. How do you get back? I mean, you're faced with very real, very present obstacles that could very quickly lead to your death. And it doesn't surprise me that somebody steps back and say, wait a second, we can't control this. At the very minimum, I hope there's somebody out there who can. And, you know, that's part of what is a great encouragement for me as a Christian, is that it isn't just a random shot. Oh, I hope it works. It's like, I do know that there's somebody out there who's in control of all this, who's bigger and knows more. And even if it's dangerous, knows how to do things wisely and can take care of me one way or the other.
Yeah, like you, I don't want to proclaim anything about what Elon Musk believes or doesn't believe. What I took away from that moment, though, was such a profound human moment, in the sense that I believe him when he says there we reached the limit to what we could do as human beings. For that moment, we thought of everything we possibly could. But what's the one thing that we didn't recognize or couldn't recognize in the moment, or actually I should say, what's the one thing that he did recognize was the limitations. Is there more out there? And if so, the human being, maybe I'm not equipped to handle that. And so what's the one thing that I can do is say a prayer and acknowledge that there are things that are out of my control. And I just found that to be such a beautiful moment in time, because, you know, he makes it very clear he's not religious, but that recognition to me just seemed so, so beautiful in that moment to hear that.
I would agree. And I think that's, you know, a little bit Jeff Zwering just speculating here, but I wonder if a danger that we face in our society is that we've come to a place where we think we can control things, and we fail to realize that there are lots of things that are beyond our control. And in some sense, trying to live within what we can control, we miss the bigger picture of what could be and what we can explore by being out there. I mean, you know, the whole space program from its inception, it was an ambitious program, but one littered with a lot of danger. And I mean, you can be careful, but there's only so much you can control, especially when you're working out in a dangerous environment. And, you know, I mean, throughout the space program, there have been some pretty serious problems that are the result of just dealing with a very, very challenging environment that you're dealing with there.
Yeah. And I think the acceptance of a religion comes with the acceptance that there are things outside of your control. And I know for me personally, there's a very calming feeling actually in that. You hear people all the time today talk about increases in anxiety. And a lot of times that increase in anxiety can boil down to this feeling that you're not in control of everything. But for someone who has a faith to turn to, not saying that people who are or Christians or who hold a belief can't have anxiety, of course, anybody can. But the idea that that's baked into it, that you have to admit there are things that are just simply outside of my control and are in the hands of someone else, and I have to accept that, seems to bring a great calmness. And I wonder if that moment when Elon says that, if in some way that brought him a calmness, certainly a calmness enough to be able to say that on a podcast that was going to go out to millions of people. I just found that to be, again, just a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it's I think that's a pretty profound point that you're making there, Joe. You know, just as I look at Christianity, you know, you look at the various things that happen throughout Scripture, and it's almost like in every single instance, God saying, "Hey, do this. It's bigger than what you know. Trust me, I've got it taken care of." That you know. I love to have things under control. It makes me very comfortable. But, you know, if nothing else, this last couple of years has shown that even in the best of circumstances, there are things that are going to happen outside my control. And if I am relying on being in control and knowing everything, I am going to be disappointed and anxious and frustrated and. One of the great things that has been a steady source of strength for me is just recognizing that I may not know what's going on here, but regardless of what's going on, the history of Christianity illustrated throughout Scripture has shown is that whether times are good or bad, Christianity is a robust life that you can live with joy and hope and purpose, regardless of whether things are going well or things are going awfully or things are unknown or things are well known. So it's been a great source of strength and resolve for myself and my family. So I think that's a pretty profound point and one that we're going to increasingly counter, especially in today's society.
And speaking to that relationship between history, Christianity, and science as well, the name Hubble, most people will know the name Hubble from, if nothing else, the Hubble telescope. But of course, he was a fantastic scientist as well, connected with the Big Bang theory, right? And you spend a lot of time foregrounding the idea of the importance of understanding that there is a beginning to the universe, right? This is at the core principle, in a sense, of Big Bang, right? But, and I had to look this up because I had overheard it, and then I wanted to double check this. Although Hubble's observations kind of corroborated this idea of the Big Bang theory and the expansion, it was originally put forward by George Lemaître, right? Lemaître? And you're hearing my half a semester of French in high school there. But he was a priest. And his pursuit, he didn't see the two things, his faith and the science, as being separate things. In fact, he saw his faith in feeding kind of an urge to see the created world in the science. And most people, I think, would be familiar with hearing the name Hubble, but not so much maybe the name Lemaître. How does your faith feed your urge, your constant urge, or how does your faith serve as the impetus for your scientific pursuit?
So I think just at a, kind of at an experiential level, I have, from my earliest memories, just been fascinated with the way things work. I remember watching my dad do chemistry demonstrations. I was 3 years old, remember watching, doing this, throwing things on the wall. And, I've seen him enough and heard since. It's what's fascinating about that is these cool things you can do that have an explanation. It's not like you're doing magic or it's this trying to deceive or delude people. It's like, no, this is why it works. We understand it. That's why we can do this. And so just this fascination with why things work, I think God's, I think that's just a curiosity that God has given and my parents developed and fed a lot. And so that fascination just to understand, you're eventually going to be asking questions of why are we, why does this work this way? Is there something bigger than the universe? And so in that sense, I think it feeds that. But I also, on a more philosophical level, when I read scripture, a very important part of scripture is that God said, God's created this world and he's revealed himself through this world. And so it would be ludicrous for a Christian to say, you know what? I've got a relationship with God. I don't need to read the Bible because that's where God reveals himself. And so you want to read the Bible. You understand what Paul has to say to the Corinthians. You want to understand what happened to Ezra and Nehemiah and Moses, because that's what helps you understand who God is and how you relate to him. Well, if God's revealed himself in scripture and scripture says that God's revealed himself in creation, then we want to go out and explore creation. And among other things I have found is that as I have been interested in understanding this physical universe, the creation, that so many times I tend to see God in a smaller box. It's like, okay, well, I've got this understood. I kind of see what's going on here. And then I realize, wait a second, maybe a multiverse exists. And it forces me to go back and say, okay, what does that tell me about who God is? One, does that fit with what he's revealed in scripture? But as I see it does, it's like, oh, wow, God is so much bigger than what I thought about him. Or God is so much more just or so much more caring. And so by studying creation, I think by doing that well, we're actually understanding God's revelation of himself to us. And so it's a personal area of growth, but also I think gives us tools that equips me to go out and share the gospel with those who might not listen to the gospel in the way it was presented 10, 20, 30 years ago. And so by being a Christian, I want to do science well because it helps me understand God's creation, but it also helps me spread the gospel message that God has given to me to others around.
In your apologetics sections of the books where you talk about how we can think about this relationship, what I appreciate too is the tone. I think you see a healthy relationship and a necessity of a kind of push at times, right? So religion can certainly be pushed by science to consider the ramifications of our existence, right? And I think that's a very necessary thing. Sometimes it needs to be pushed. But there's also a need for a push back the other way as well, if for no other reason than to at least consider the ramifications of what science can do, right? Very famously in Jurassic Park, right? Dr. Ian Malcolm, people talk about this all the time, but it's a fair question, this idea of just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean you should. And I think there needs to be, it doesn't always have to be religion. Sometimes it can just be straight philosophy or just straight questions coming from human, the human experience. There needs to be an equilibrium, a healthy pushback against each other in order to, I think, achieve that kind of balance that we're all looking for between science, religion, and just human experience. Do you find that dialogue within your peers happening?
I think it does. I know that that's the dialogue I try and foster a lot in myself. You know, so when I see a scientific discovery, I think, okay, how does that relate to what Christianity? Does that push me? Do I need to think bigger? I don't know whether it's a universal principle or not, but I find that, well, this explanation works, so I'll live there, but it may not be as general as it needs to be, you know? And so in the same way, general relativity doesn't show Newtonian dynamics was wrong. It just gave us a bigger picture. And I think, God is always about, you know, he gives us enough to know him, but then he always wants to get, there's always a bigger picture because you cannot exhaust how big a picture God is. I do find scientists are wrestling with this. Some scientists, you know, I mean, there are very vocal ones who are very clear. Now, science is the way to do things. Religion, theology, philosophy, that's all just, that's not a good way to do things. And we've shown it to be wrong. That seems to be kind of a naive and a academically unsophisticated way of looking at how science and particularly Christianity have interacted with one another over the last 400 years. But I do find, you know, just naturally as you're exploring things and you find this discovery, people are wondering, what does that mean? Going all the way back to earlier in our conversation, you know, just that tension, if you will, I remember being in a colloquium, I happened to work with one of the colleagues in the department where I was working was on the WMAP experiment. This was an experiment looking out at the cosmic microwave background radiation, which had recently been found, or the ripples in it had been found, and they had confirmed that we live in a certain kind of universe. And so a number of years had passed and WMAP was supposed to come in and give just a lot of details. And so I remember anxiously being in this colloquium, and there was this tension or excitement in the room. And the fellow got up and he said, you know, well, this is what we found. And it basically confirms all our thoughts about our cosmology and what we were thinking. And there were two responses, sometimes in the same person. One of the responses was, yeah, that's cool, we got it right. And the other one was, oh man, I hope we're going to find some new problems to work on. And so there is this idea of the more there is to explore, that's a fascinating, let's go out and learn more. One of the problems with that, though, is that it's so fun in the search that you can get distracted from stepping back and asking, "The why are we doing this? And what does this have to say about the big picture?" And scientists are people. We have this kind of sense that scientists are these objective, autonomous, driven by rationality in all things. Now, the reality is science is very rational and objective on long enough time scales, but scientists are people and they think dumb things, spontaneous. Take any sort of person, you're going to find a scientist who has that personality. They're just committed to validating whether their ideas align with the real world and then trying to get a better and better picture.
Jeff, what are you working on now? What kind of projects or thought exercises, anything? What are you working on now?
Well, my recent big project was just kind of tackling the issue of artificial intelligence and thinking, what's going on with that? Are we going to do that? And as a Christian, how do we think about that? What are some of the big ideas there? And so I wrote a manuscript, and so that's in the editorial process that I think is supposed to come out next year. I work over at UCLA as a project scientist, and we're working on a balloon experiment, floating this large payload up above Antarctica, where we're looking for a certain type of particle that if we find a handful of these, it'll tell us what dark matter is, which, I talk about things that have been around for a long time and haven't been answered. We've known about dark matter for 80 years. We see its gravitational effects, but we still don't know what it is. And so the prospect that we might get some of the clues that will answer that question is very fascinating. And I love the experimental part of building this detector. Can we make it find the thing we're going to look for, fly it in the air, and then, okay, what does the data tell us once we get the data?
That's wonderful. Well, Dr. Zwerink, this has been a fascinating conversation. I thank you so much. Where can you tell people? I'll put links in the show notes to various places, but can you tell people a little bit about where they can go to learn more about you and your work?
The best place to go learn about it is just go to reasons.org. That's a website that has all the articles and podcasts and videos and resources that we have available. You can find me on Twitter, follow me on Facebook. I'm on those two media or two social media platforms. Those are kind of the best two places to go find out. So the social media and then reasons.org.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, I have really enjoyed our conversation, Joe. I didn't realize an hour had passed. It's been so fun.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Jeff Zwierink. If not, there may be another version of me who did the interview with him that you did enjoy. But for now, there's only me. If you're interested in learning more about Dr. Zwierink's work, please check out the links that I've provided in the episode notes. And don't forget to subscribe/follow the Neutral Ground podcast on whichever platform you're currently listening to me on. And if you're so moved, please leave a kind comment and or rating where applicable. Those really help to get our message of civil discourse out to more eyes and ears. And as always, try to keep one foot firmly planted on neutral ground. And have a great day. All of you, I mean, you know, all the various versions of you that might be out there as well. I hope all of your various versions have a great day.